Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Since 2010, Music Nomad Equipment Care has been making premium and innovative guitar care products used and trusted every day by top guitar repair shops, guitar makers, and touring techs in over 50 countries. Pro quality but affordable Music Nomad is also the go-to for countless guitar players around the globe to help their guitars look, sound, and play their best. Whether changing strings, setting up your guitar, or detailing every inch of your gear, Music Nomad products are designed and engineered to be their best in class. From top to bottom, each product is so well thought out that it's clear their passion for guitar care is unmatched. With over 100 industry-leading products, it's hard to talk about them all, but some of the favorites are their 100% natural fretboard oil that cleans and conditions your fingerboard like no other, their Guitar Tech tool sets that can adjust just about anything on a guitar, string changing tools that make changing strings a breeze and actually fun, and they demystified the guitar setup process by developing their new innovative Keep It Simple setup, aka KISS for guitar setups. Their KISS precision gauge toolset comes with easy to follow instructions and many how-to videos anyone can follow to set up their guitar to play and sound great. And last but not least, their recent introduction of a game-changing fret care tool line, which takes fret care to the next level. Make sure you check out what all the buzz is about around Music Nomad, as they truly are redefining and raising the bar in equipment care. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com or follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare.
So, JD, This week, and I did mention this on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, but we have been sent a joke book by Matt Parker, friend of the podcast, great bass player, and he has sent us this joke book, which is a dad joke a day, and it has jokes actually listed in calendar format, so I will always now have a joke for the specific day that we are recording the podcast. Today, we're recording a bit early this week, aren't we, on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. It's the 3rd. So we're going to go for the 3rd of September's joke. Prepare yourself, JD.
All right. Ready.
Prepare yourself, dear listener. Here we go. They're all golden. These ones are great. Okay. How can you tell if a vampire has a cold?
I don't know. How?
He starts coughing.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, hello, dear listener. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Brandon, joined this week by JD Short.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, hello, JD. Yeah, this book is absolutely fantastic. Like, if we'd been recording yesterday, we'd have got this one. How does a scientist freshen her breath?
Oh, I don't know. How does that happen?
With experiments.
Oh, great.
Really strong.
I'm glad we recorded today. I like today's.
Yes, today's was strong. I'm looking forward to you know, all of the rest of this year's podcast intros. I don't have to rely on you anymore, dear listener, sending me in often pretty lame duck jokes. I'll be honest. It was slim pickings for a while.
Plus, the thing is, like, there's many years of this because, you know, next year. We typically record on the same days. We're going to get different jokes.
Ah, of course.
So next year it would be like the 4th or the 5th that we record. It'll be great.
This book has probably got 5 years in it. That's great.
I mean, it's probably the thing we'll keep the longest. You know, it's like all these new pedals, these new guitars we have. They're going to be shifted. This book will outlast them all.
They are. I am looking forward to. I'm getting closer to doing my big guitar pedals and amplifier sell-off. Like, it's going to be huge. But I can't do it in my spare time. I need to, like, book a couple of days off of work, yeah, take loads of photos, get all those listings. That's so, you know, much stuff, like, things I forget about.
Yeah, I've got so much stuff, and I got rid of loads of stuff when I moved. And also, it's not like I stopped acquiring stuff, but there's just so many things. I was like, you know, I would like for this to go to somebody else, but also I quite like having stuff, so that's tough.
Your reduction in gear was obviously substantial, but you still managed to keep a lot, like the office room that you're that you record from, because you live in this lovely sort of cottagey style building.
It's like a terraced house.
But it's like a cottagey terraced house.
It
really lovely, and what a random thing to have bang in the middle of London, sort of thing. So it's very unusual. But of course, in that true cottagey style, dear listener, especially if you're from the UK, you'll know what we mean. Everything, although it is almost as if people were substantially smaller whenever it was built, because all the rooms are very small, and the office that you have, it fits a desk in, and you, and, you know, a few other things around you, but that's roughly it. Like, you couldn't get a bed in there.
It's an
office room. It's a study. It's a small study. Yeah. Yet you've managed to get in not only your desk with monitors, rack mount interfaces, and all the rest. You've got you've got pedal shelves. Fine, you know, that's in the corner. You've managed to get a Nord stage in there. Guitars on every wall. The Fenton Wild, which is that sort of British version of a Ampeg B15 amplifier, and until you lent it to me, a double bass.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least it was an electric double bass, you know, electric upright. So it's, I mean, it's just, you just have to know how to use space a bit. I mean, there's more stuff in here too. Like, I have an old Marshall keyboard amp, which is the Keyboard 12, which is great. Actually, really good clean tone on it.
There you go.
That's a hot tip if anyone's looking. they come up for next to nothing every once in a while. All my studio stuff. But I mean, the thing is, like, I sacrifice desk space to be able to get rack mount. Like, I have my desk has, you know, was it 12 slots, racks in there now. And I think I have a new desk since you've been here, because I wanted to reclaim a bit more space. So it's taller and shallower than before. But yeah, there's loads of space, not much else, but, you know, that's what I'm doing here.
So. I'd quite like to get a desk that's got those built-in areas for rack stuff. I'd have to start buying rack stuff, but that would be cool. It would be a new thing to purchase, you know, and it would feed that that gear acquisition syndrome.
I mean, the thing is, you know, it's once you start getting into studio gear, it's just, you know, we think guitars are bad, but it's, you know, it's like add a zero to everything. It's the old adage of, you know, to get something twice as good, you have to, you know, add a zero. So, you know, $100 thing, something twice as good as $100 things, a thousand to 10,000, etc. Whereas, like, it's more fun to be like, oh, I can have 72 drives. Isn't this great? Instead of like, how many ultra clean preamps do I have?
Exactly. I just, you know, I think I've always got on so well with plugins, and I guess got lucky or felt that that the plugins were doing everything I need, whether they were or not. Certainly, I don't really get any complaints about the audio quality of any of my demos or anything like that. So, and everything, you know, even the compressors are all digital. I'm not using anything that's outboard gear. I guess the only posh thing I use actually for recording is the Focusrite ISA1.
It's such a great preamp.
Yeah, but that's it. As long as you've got one, you know, there's one. It's just the ISA1, dear listener. If you've not, you know, checked it out, it's very good. It's basically just one channel from a Neve desk. That's it. It's dead simple, and it sounds very good.
I mean, I say this all the time. I think all bass players should have one. And I think, like, you know, even all guitar players in the same, just because you don't typically do DI guitar stuff. Yeah. But as you're saying with plugins and everything, it's like the great thing about the ISA1 is that you can record a, like, basically a DI and a mic channel at the same time. So it'll have the dual output. So if you mic a cabinet, you can record direct mic, your mic signal, alt is separate tracks, and it's basically, it gives you all the flexibility you ever really need. Plus, it sounds great. So
it is, yeah. It is very good. I actually, last week, I've long-term loaned it to a friend who has a studio, just because I felt like I did, as much as I absolutely love that piece of gear, I wanted something that was a bit more valve-y. So I'm going to pick up, haven't quite yet, I was bidding on a couple of them, a Universal Audio Solo 610.
Oh, those are great too.
Really nice. They're dead simple, dear listener. Again, it's just like it's a tube mic preamp, but because it's a tube mic preamp and you've got like a gain control on there, you can get some gorgeous, like, muffly tones. I think it works especially well for bass, but just lovely for getting something where all your high ends rolled off a little bit, everything sounds a little bit warm and vintage. Obviously terrible for versatility, but if everything you do, which I think everything I do is kind of, you know, I want that sort of thing, then it's the perfect tool. Yeah. And not rack mount, it's just like a long cylinder, a bit like the ISA-1, so it's perfect for me because I end up putting stuff on top of my monitors, really, rather than racking them anyway.
Yeah, those UAs, those preamps are great. Like, I've used them. They're sort of the ones that everyone had when you started doing DIY recording and things like that. When you got, like, good, because they were the first sort of good preamps that you could get,
right?
They weren't some old piece of kit that no one, you know, that was someone else's, you know, like, rubbish at some point, but but they were just like ones you could buy new that were good, that were vibey, that just worked across the board.
And they go for £700, which I know that's a chunk of money, dear listener, but when you're talking about, like, high quality preamps, it is, as JD said, very much.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, the thing that I find, and, like, one of the reasons I like the ISA too, is that, it's very clean, but it's got its own coloration. But when you stack it across, so if you're recording parts in sequence, so you're recording everything through that, it doesn't add to, so you don't get, like, a lot of buildup that you have to sort of manage over the course of 20 tracks, where it's like, oh, well, this all of this thing that I thought sounded really vibey now is too vibey because it's become a big pool. But I mean, preamp's great. Just check, because I'm staring at it now, is my the valve preamp I have is I have the Alembic FX or F1X preamp, which is basically just a bass preamp, but that's frankly what I record with it.
Of course, yeah, so that's, like, 90% of what you're going to be doing.
Yeah, and you know, my mics go through other preamps, usually the ISA-1 or, you know, something else if I'm just chucking it in, or the, you know, honestly, the preamps on my interface are good enough if I'm not doing a proper lead vocal tag, you know, it's all totally fine.
That's it.
A rec gear, everyone. don't do it, because it's a forever expanding thing. It's why I haven't gotten into 500 series or Euro racks, or it's just I don't want to do it.
Slippery slope.
I don't want to do it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, whilst we're actually talking about recording gear, sort of accidentally segues quite nicely. I wanted to do like a little bit of housekeeping at the start of this week's episode, dear listener. So we've got a few things on the go at the moment. I guess before I talk about the interface things, let's talk about the Chapman Guitars competition. All of you, dear listener, if you haven't seen, I've mentioned it a couple of times, you can win a Chapman ML1X. It's a fantastic Super Strat style guitar, Seymour Duncan loaded, HSS pickup configuration, a lovely modern trem system that works really well. The neck is great. Like, it's not too, when I see Chapman stuff, I'm always worried that it's going to be too modern, but actually in feel and playability, it has those modern things, but it feels very classic. The neck isn't too small and slim and uncomfortable. It's a great guitar. I think they're about £600, something like that. It's a pretty premium instrument. It's the sort of thing that you could absolutely have as your main gigging guitar every day. And I really think the humbucker, especially the Seymour Duncan humbucker on there, sounds fantastic. And you can win it, dear listener. All you've got to do is tell Chapman what your dream guitar would be. They've got this little form that they've put together with us. You just have to sort of answer a few multiple choice questions, sort of building your ideal guitar. The reason they're doing this is because they love to design things by committee. They love to know what people are looking for in a guitar. And it helps them inform their choices on their next run of instruments. So it's not that they're building something off the back of this, it's that they're taking it all into consideration. They could well end up building something off the back of this. But also what was really nice is Dan Orchard, who is the head of marketing for Chapman, who is a lovely fellow. I've known him for years. He's worked for a load of other guitar companies in his time. He's just really good at his job. He's been feeding me back all of the answers, telling me like what's the most popular thing at the moment. I did a little video on Instagram that you should check out, dear listener, where I've read out what those answers were. But it was really interesting to see what people had chosen. I can't remember off the top of my head exactly what it was now, but it was definitely an offset. In fact, let's do it on the podcast because you know you might not have seen it on the Instagram. Let me find. Man searches mm-hmm. through his emails on a podcast.
great. If only I had a copy of the dad joke book, I could
That's what I need to get. I need to get one to every host, so everyone everyone has one.
with different jokes for different days. That's what it'd be like.
So this is the spec that's been the most popular so far. I mean, this was 4 days ago, and hopefully there have been a load more responses since then as well. But please make sure you enter, dear listener. But it looks like the most popular thing was an HH offset. Now, I did kind of think offset would probably be the thing that you guys would all go for, but an HH offset that sounds warm and vintage. It would be a one color semi-translucent gloss finish with a standard 6-inline headstock and a 5-way pickup selector. So I guess you'd have to do some coil tapping things there with the 5-way. But it was really interesting to then like break down into to drill down into the some of those specifications a bit further. Like it was interesting to see that of the three most popular body shapes, offset, Telecaster and Stratocaster, S-Type was the least popular, 14%. And I kind of feel like we're in a Strat time at the moment. That feels like the most popular guitar to me at the moment, but least popular amongst everyone, like all of you lot. 29% said offset, 19% said T-Type. And then on the neck pickup, it was virtually tied between a humbucker and a P90. Humbucker winning by a single percent, 27% to 26%. Single coil was not that far behind at 23%. So that was very, very hot, content.
Hotly contested.
Thank you.
Contest.
we're both of us are quite hungover, dear listener. So I'm struggling. Yeah.
Why did we do this on a Sunday?
It's such a bad idea. The middle pickup. 60% of you said no middle pickup. So that's good. You know, bridge pickup. This one, 56% said humbucker. Runaway winner. 16% on P90. Nowhere near. 13% on single coil. Absolutely dominating humbucker. And then, there were some other things like gloss or matte finish was hotly contested as well, 55% to 45% on matte, so not a lot in there. And then on wood grain, you wanted translucent colors, 55% of you, 34% said solid color, no grain. So I don't think of translucent colors as being especially popular, but they really dominated. And then on the color, going for one solid color, 42% people wanted one solid color. Only 19% of people wanted a burst, which was interesting. And then headstock, six aside, had 37% runaway winner. Trem only just won, 56 to 44, having no trem. And then oddly, 41% of people wanted a 5-way blade rather than the 3-way toggle. At only 33%, but it was interesting to see that is amongst the Guitar Nerds listeners.
Yeah,
that's what we ended up with.
There are some prizes in there. I think you know, we can all take about our own takeaways, like on the Facebook group or someplace. But like, I mean, Offset, I sort of expected it, but I know which. It's interesting because I know what you mean about like it feeling like a real like Strat S type time, but. Yeah. But also, you know, we are the guitar nerds, so we kind of know more than most people. So, you know, we're definitely not.
I'm worried that Chapman think they're getting some sort of great, you know, general demographic of people. But I feel that the guitar nerds listener is a very particular type of person with particular tastes.
Yeah. Guitar nerds listeners who also fill out surveys.
Yeah,
I feel like that's...
Yeah, actually, not that many of you have. Only 400 so far, and considering there are something like 50,000 of you, that's not a great contribution. Dear listener, you should do it.
You into survey.
I really did then.
This is a poor showing. Oh, you're making us look bad. Fill out a survey.
Yeah, well, it would help me out, but that's I don't know. You do you, dear listener. Strats Reverb, number one best-selling guitar something for like 2 years now, was the PRS Silver Sky, and it was like all Strats in second and third place on I appreciate that's just Reverb sales, you know, not everywhere else, but And it can get skewed there because it can be a case of like, well, maybe it's because everyone was selling Silver Skies, so there were loads more of them on Reverb. But nonetheless, like bunch of Strats in the most sold guitars for the last 2 years, and then just nowhere to be seen on this.
Here at Guitar Nerds, we're massive fans of StringJoy guitar strings, and you should be too. StringJoy, if you don't know, are the world's first true string custom shop. That's where they started, with the idea to offer extremely high quality strings in all the funny gauges that you could possibly need. Shredders looking for a thicker bottom end, country players looking for extra twang, etc. But what they've become is something much more. StringJoy realized that the standard that us players accept for string quality is pretty low. Manufacturers have been building cheaply and quickly for years, and we've just accepted that as par for the course. And most of us probably didn't really know any better. So StringJoy moved into actual standard string gauge manufacture too, offering the same superior quality, craftsmanship and attention to detail that they do with their custom sets. Their whole thing is to be the best, and not just to make the most. So I think they're well worth your time and interest. StringJoy strings are available at stringjoy.com and at 400 plus dealers across the globe. If your local store doesn't stock StringJoy yet, ask them to.
Yeah, I wonder if the Silver Skies are just really there because it's... Well, I'll make a comparison. You know how like for me, my father... For a hot moment, decided he wanted to start golfing, and he's like, "I'm just going to start golfing." And then, for years, everyone in the family just bought him golf stuff, even though he went golfing like twice. And so, I feel like the Silver Sky is the like, what do we get, Dad? And then it's also one of those like, it's probably the number one guitar for midlife crises. I would presume.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's certainly with the introduction of the affordable one, now you can have a midlife crisis and not even have to spend, you know, $2,000 on it.
But. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's great. Everyone knows our feelings.
We deliberately, even though it definitely should have got Gear of the Year, deliberately cut it out.
I mean,
all to elect a guitar that all of us were pretty indifferent to, but
But that's the thing. It's like you can't get Gear of the Year if you're indifferent to something. Like that never happens. There's always something that's exciting.
Yeah,
even if it's a power supply.
Fun. Yeah. Well, we're on the Patreon, inspired by Abe Matthews' post. When JD and I finish this regular episode and we go over to the Patreon, we might talk a little bit about what our Gear of the Year picks are so far. Just completely off the list. Just what's impressed us so far this year, because to be honest, I haven't even started collating the list yet of what. Every year I'm like, do this as you go, Joe, because otherwise there's a whole 12 months of like press releases you have to go back through. And of course, every year I don't do it.
This is a little too how the vegan sausage is made, I'd say. But I wonder if that's something maybe we, you know, for next year or something, we start thinking like a monthly or quarterly Patreon episode of just like here's the things that we're going to put in it, and maybe those go into like brackets or something like that, so that you get all the stuff from the first couple months, because otherwise, you know, recency effect means that, you know, whatever the latest Chase Bliss thing is the thing we're going to be excited about. But then there's this, you know, whole little bit where you start off competing with, you know, like your own time frame instead or something. Yeah. Anyway, don't need to go into that, but that's an idea I just had that I shared with everybody.
There you go. Well, yeah, we'll discuss that on the Patreon, our gear of the year so far. So the other thing I wanted to talk about, leading on from interfaces and things like that, is obviously Guitar Nerds. We use Lewitt microphones in general. Actually, JD isn't using one right now, but I really should send you one, JD.
I've almost purchase mini, but yeah, so we'll talk about that off the pod.
So Lewitt microphones, they're absolutely fantastic. Dan Pilver at Lewitt Microphones has been a podcast listener and a friend of the podcast for many years. He's a cracking fella, and you know, he supports a bunch of podcasts, which is why you often see guitar podcasters with Lewitt mics, because they are so very good, and he's got his finger on the pulse of this sort of industry. So we've spoken about their mics and how great they are in the past, and what incredible value for money you get against, I guess they seem to roughly be at every price point, they're about 200 quid less than competition that are putting out the same sort of quality, which is really good. But they're also fantastic mics. And over the next few weeks, I'm going to be doing some demos with my partner, Emma, because we've got she's got a new Lewitt LCT-640. I just had to check the numbers on it.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic microphone that allows stereo recording. It has like a second mini XLR out on it so that you can record both sides of the capsule at once, which is very useful. But it's an amazing microphone for, you know, for less than £1,000. That's wonderful, a wonderful alternative to things like a TLM 103, stuff like that. Like just a really great classic sounding vocal mic. Anyway, that's something I'm going to do in the future. But we are going to be also giving away a Lewitt Connect 6, which is their new interface, which is very good. So it's a dual USB-C audio interface with like a studio grade preamps with 72 decibels of gain, which is very, very useful. It has like an auto setup thing for voice and vocals and instruments. So it can listen to you and set some little DSP effects for like noise reduction and stuff like that, which is very useful for on the fly recording and just taking a step out of your editing process, to be honest, for podcasts and things like that. And you can also, it's got like great routing on it, so you can connect a phone and things like that if you have someone calling in maybe on a podcast. But it's great. It looks fantastic and it works really well because they just have one large weighted knob, rotary knob, that controls everything. And then you just press it to scroll through your monitor mixes, your mic gain levels and things like that. So it's kind of neat and minimal and it looks great and it is very good. It has great software that comes with it. I've been really impressed. I've had one for a couple of weeks now and been using it and it's really good. JD, you're getting one as well.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we'll be using those moving forward and we'll be giving one away. I'll work out exactly how I'm going to do that over the next week, but I just want to let you know, dear listener, because you should check it out, especially if you are thinking about getting an interface. You know, we're always promoting recording at home for guitar nerds, getting your demo ideas down just a little bit better, anything like that, the Connect 6 is just a brilliant tool that will really help you be able to do that well. So watch this space for that. Sorry, this is the housekeeping section. This podcast is going on a little longer. And I want to let you know that next week we're finally starting the Vintage Pro Shop competition. So that's where each week, me and whoever the podcast host is, we're going to be going through some options for our custom build from Vintage. Now, this one actually is being built by Vintage. So each week we'll give you a couple of options. You can vote on them, dear listener, over the week leading up to the next podcast, and then we'll announce the winner, move on to the next part. So we'll choose, you know, finish, body shape, pickups, things like that. We'll do a different bit each week until we end up with our inevitable Homer of a Vintage Pro Shop guitar, and they will build it for us and send it to us, and then we can give it away to you guys. So a bunch of giveaways basically coming up, dear listener. So watch this space, I guess, and see what happens next. Now,
when you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
JD and me want to talk about accessories. That's a thing. We said we wanted to do that for ages, do a bit of a podcast all about accessories. We want to talk through pedal boards, picks, cables, patch cables, power supplies, straps, tools. I've even done a category for other. I don't know what's going to be in there. And we're going to do cases and maybe strings as well. But we're going to work our way through all of those things and talk about some of our favorites and the things that we think you should be checking out. Because as it's been mentioned on the Facebook group when we've spoken about doing this, it's very easy to get caught up in the glamour and the glitz of effects pedals and amps and guitars, but there are some, you know, you can let down your entire setup by using a, I don't know, like a Donna power supply.
Yeah.
So it's important to make sure all your, the little things are covered as well. So we're going to talk through some of those. Should we start with pedal boards, JD?
Yeah, let's do that. Pedal boards.
So we've spoken about this a little bit in the past. We went through some of our favorite pedal board options, but a brand that was a listener messaged to me recently, and you and I, JD, have been taking a look at before we did this podcast, is Rolf Pedal Boards. They are a Swiss pedal board company. I think they're Swiss.
Yeah,
Swiss. And they look absolutely fantastic. Dear listener, you have to check them out. Rolf, R-O-L-F, rolfpedalboards.com. The website's amazing. How they divide up their pedal board options is really cool. And they're bigger than I realized because they've got like this client list on their homepage. And it's got like Converge, Cult of Luna, Mastodon, you know, so they've got big bands are already using their pedal boards, so they're obviously popular. I just, I guess, such a pedal train. You know, I just default to pedal train and more recently mono pedal boards and the Boss pedal boards as well. And I don't tend to look at these things.
I think, I mean, the thing with pedalboard is I also have several pedal trains and have done for, well, basically since they came out, really. So like probably nearly 20 years now, but it's just so interesting because you do that. And then I always kind of come back to pedal trains because they're so light and, you know, they're this one of the sturdiest things you can get. Plus, they're big. They're big as in popular, and there's so many. You know, like, there's mounting kits and all the other stuff that kind of come with it. So you're sort of like into an ecosystem that's great. But the first thing I noticed about like Rolf and some of these other ones is that it just looks. They look cool. They look vibey. They look really, really useful. And there's so many new like routing options and everything that you see on pedalboard. Like pedalboards have definitely got more complex in the last, 10 years. Yeah. Let's say, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's got a lot tidier, haven't they? It's even when you look back, I look back on some of like my pedal heroes, you know, people like Juan Odorete and Omar Rodriguez Lopez. Of course, I'm going to cite those, dear listener, but really, I look back on their pedal boards and their pedal boards are rubbish. Like, yeah. I was watching a video recently for like Juan was doing. I mean, it was obviously an old video, but it was him talking about a tour board that he was taking out for to some. I can't remember. It was like a dub band or something like that he was playing with.
Oh yeah, like Deltron or whatever.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, Deltron 4040. Yeah. 4040, I think. But he was doing a video for those, and he had this 2-tier pedal board, and I was like, oh, what is that? And I started trying to search around to find what it was. It was like an Amazon pedal board. Yeah. Like that was it. They don't even come with cases or anything. It's just a board. I guess, you know, he's got to pack that into something else. It's just, everything's just connected in a line. Yeah. You know, it's there's no switches or anything like that. No real cable tidying. It's all just, you know, whatever patch cables. There's no custom patch cables or anything like that. It's the sort of boards where the power supplies are on the top, because at that, you know, people hadn't thought to mount power supplies underneath the boards at that time.
And it's, do a real slanted board or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I also think about it because there's one thing, like pedal trains are great, you know, for gigging, for rehearsal and such, but they don't especially look nice. Right. And, yeah, you know, and the fact that I have pedals always set up at home as well, you know, I sort of want something that makes me like looking at it, you know, just to be like, oh, that's cool, isn't it? You know, and it's like, yes, it's about what's on the board, but it's just, I just want something well-made, something that looks nice, something that's functional, but I also don't want to just have something that's, you know, pretty and sort of unusable. Like I still, like, but so my general rule is like, everything has to be gig worthy. Otherwise, right, what's the point, really?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And it's, I think, one of the reasons I keep coming back to pedal train often is the versatility and the simplicity of them. Like the slatted design works really well. I don't know the deal exactly with this, dear listener, but I like to understand pedal train have in some way patented the idea of slatted pedal boards. So every other company has to find some sort of get around. I think there's something around that. I could be wrong. That could have just been something someone said to me at some point, but
I feel like the surely that's about to run out, because I think those kinds of things are only like maybe 14-year like patents or something.
So. Yeah, hopefully it's something like that. But I do find that a lot of companies they're always trying to do something different, and I'm always like, why? The slatted idea just works. It allows you to tidy cables very easily. It means you can put pedals anywhere that are any size. It's just a better idea than anything else. So I often end up coming back to pedal train on account of that. But coming back to Rolf pedal boards, the way they split out the different types of pedal boards is fantastic, dear listener. They don't have, you know, you're not buying, I don't know, with a pedal train, do like the Juno, the Pro, sorry, Juno, the Junior, the Pro, the One, the Two. Those are the names of pedal train. These guys have a logo, which is like an animal, like a weird drawn sort of heavy metal looking animal head. as the logo for each different size. And then they are named. So they have their four pedal, their small four pedal series, which is called the Bong Rippus. The Bong Rippus. I'm not saying
like,
that right.
Like a bong rip.
Sure. Maybe that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I guess that is it. And then the eight pedal is the Tympanatus. And then 12 is the Umbellus. 10 to 16 is the Centrocerus. And then the Dendragapus is 16 to 20. And then they do custom. But even custom has its own logo, which is some sort of
chicken goat.
Chicken thing. Goat head. Yeah. Which is weird.
They're all great. They all look like amazing pieces of flash.
Yeah.
You know, my.
That's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
But yeah, so those are how the boards are divvied out. And then you can click into each one and get a closer look. And oh, they look really good. Really pro.
Yeah. Mate. I mean, the thing is, like, the thing I really like about it is that they're simple. The other thing is you get different color choices. So most of it, you know, it's like multi-layer laminate board. But yeah. then you also, like wood board, like multi-layer, just a laminate board. That's same as saying multi-layer, really, I suppose. But then there's also colors you can get, like ringing them. So there's like reds and blues, burgundy, like white, black. And that's also a thing you don't really see that much. Like, yeah. like almost all boards are just, you either get tweed or some sort of like really hyper-stylized board, or you get just black, like it's yeah. black, or you know, some of the like temple or some other ones will have little end pieces. But then yeah, this just seems like a really, really tasteful way to go, oh, here's a red board, here's a blue board, which I would imagine if loads of people in your band have multiple pedal boards, it's really nice to be able to do that, to be able to communicate with yeah. someone who's not in your band, to be like, oh, the red board needs, you know, that's the rooting for this and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, like totally. Yeah, it's pretty nice. I mean, the options on there, each one you can choose to have it flat or slanted. There's also some cable connectivity options, power supply, and sockets. That you can customize and have custom fit to it. So you can choose your ins and outs and how they work and how they function on the side of each board, which is very nice indeed. I really like that. They even have like a little bit down the bottom where they've got like artists playing that particular pedal board. Mm. And in some cases, I'm looking at the Bong Rippus, the smaller board, they're like, oh, here's this guy, Ron Petsk. And Oh, is he actually from a band called Bong Ripper?
Well, that would make sense.
That makes sense, right? Okay, but it has like little pictures of what his actual board is with that, which is very cool.
I'm really into these boards. I like them. I like the idea that you could do flat or slanted, because I quite like a slanted board, but I know yeah. other people I played with prefer flat boards.
Right.
I don't know why, but just because I want the real estate of, I don't need to see my power supply, you know, like it's, yeah. Yeah. they're fine. I'm really into these, and I sort of like setting the stage for all of our like accessory conversation is that one of the great things about accessories and things like this is that even the most expensive stuff we'll probably be talking about isn't wildly expensive. And it's right. the kind of stuff that you can treat yourself that makes everything else sort of, it makes your life easier. It makes stuff better. The fact that you could do a custom board with the routing that you do built into the board is one, it's just tidy. So if you're doing it at home or rehearsal or whatever, but you know, for a gig, it's so much nicer to have mounted to the board, you know, like sends and returns or, you know, whatever your ins and outs are. So the, it's just sturdier and it's customized to your current setup. Yeah. And it's one of those things that it seems hard to justify when you're thinking, I was like, oh, do I spend another, you know, like 20 quid trying to just have this set up? And it's like, do it because it's just nicer. It's like all the stuff we'll talk about later, you know, too, is it's good to do, you know, like yeah. it's all the utility stuff matters.
Isotope Native Instruments and Plugin Alliance are launching a whole bunch of super hot deals for the Summer of Sound sale. From now until the 6th of July 2023, Isotope are offering all their software for 50% or more off, including the comprehensive mixing and mastering bundle Music Production Suite 5, as well as flagship tools like Ozone, RX, Neutron, and more. All things I use to edit this podcast. Visit isotope.com and check out the frankly colossal range of things that you can get at extraordinary prices, and take your mixing and editing to a whole new level.
Yeah, absolutely. These pedal boards actually aren't that expensive. I mean, the 8-pedal one, which I assume is probably the most popular sort of size, the tympanatus, is 150 euro, which is... Now, these don't come with cases, so you'd have to go somewhere else, Swan Flight, somewhere like that, and have something custom-made to this size. So that's going to add another probably 150 quid. On top of it, which is a shame. I wish they did flight cases of their own with it. I think it's almost a missed opportunity there, because I don't think people want to go to a separate company for a case. But then I guess this way you can, you know, get the case that's right for you. If you don't need a flight case, you can, you know, get something made up, a soft bag made up for it, that sort of thing. So, or you know, there are options anyway. But
yeah,
but nonetheless. Really cool. Really like the look of Rolf pedal boards. And I love that they've made customization a part of their standard line without having to look into fully custom pedal board companies, who are also fantastic, like Alder & Ash, great pedal board company. But of course, you're building everything from scratch with them. So the price tag is, you know, in line with a completely custom made pedal board. I really like that these are very affordable and, you get to do a bunch of customizations with them.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, just to say quickly about their custom bit, is that they basically have, so it's the slanted ones, for at least that I was looking at, they have sort of the rails, like the framing for it. And then you can basically get whatever custom size top you want
right.
on it as well. So you can really, you could really change the sort of floor real estate, you know, what size you wanted with that. And it seems like for them, that makes it pretty modular so that it's not, you know, it's not three times the money just because, you know, like they don't have to retool everything, or it doesn't have to be completely from scratch, you know, like it's like, oh, we have the pieces. What do you need? We can help. There you go. Yeah. So I'm really, plus, I mean, they do look rad. I love their little logo. Like the little like plate they have on the back of the boards, like a little metal plate that just says Rolf with a that like animal head logo. And it's like, that's a unique thing. Again, you know, like what we're talking about, like Pedal Train looks great, but the Pedal Train logo also looks like
it's
92 or something. You know, like
in line with like Peavey and Carlsbro.
Yeah.
sort of
yeah. Like very like, this is good. Well-made, high quality. You're not paying for marketing.
No, you know, we invested in a logo in 1982 and we're gonna keep it. Yeah, very Voodoo Labs, the Pedal Train. But yeah, okay, so do check them out, dear listener. Rolf pedal boards. I think I've talked myself into it. I might actually reach out.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to get one too.
Damn it, what have we done?
Why do we do this show? Every time, it's like, well, there's 8 more things I got. So.
Exactly. Okay, so next topic. JD, you can choose. We can do cables or cases, because I know you've got stuff to say about
this. Let's do cases, because this came up the other day. Someone... outside this group, someone asked on Facebook about like flying with cases. So I went back down a case rabbit hole.
You're actually going to educate me here, because you said this just before we started recording. You said what it was, and I was like, I've never heard of that. What is it?
Yeah. Yeah. So my favorite case, is the Groove Gear capsule. And so I'll give you a chance to look at that. So Capsule with a K, K-A-P-S-U-L-E.
Right.
And so I was going to get these. So initially, Groove Gear, who's a great company, Southern California, do loads of great stuff, bags. We've talked about the mute they do and like the fret wrap.
Of course, fret wrap frame.
But like I have some of their, like I have one of their, they have a very large sort of backpack, rucksack bag that's great that you can basically take out all the internal structure within it. So that's actually what I took when I did that gig a little while ago with, I took the small Stonefield cabinet and the Ashdown Ant, both of which, and you know, cables and all the other leads and stuff I needed all fit in this one backpack. So I was just,
right,
just me on the train with a gig bag and like a backpack and did a reasonable gig. So that's cool. Yeah. So I highly recommend their stuff. But the Capsule is great because it's, to me, it's the best I've seen to date of the sort of hybrid gig bag stroke hard case in that it's basically a polycarbonate ABS shell case, but it's got backpack straps. It's got wheels that you can attach to it. It's fully flight worthy in that I would have no qualms checking this, you know, putting it in the hold or anything because of the ABS shell. The internal padding's great. Groove Gear especially they spend a lot of time on the actual design of things. So it looks cool, but it's also hugely functional. They're all, like everyone I've ever met from Groove Gear are all musicians as well. So, you know, right. It's a real, we love. And I think this is right. Jay, I think he's the president of the company or whatever title would be. He plays like a Scold bass. So like, you know, odd shape, custom, you know, like a very, very high end bass. They're great basses too. But it's a thing. And the Capsule fits. I tried it at NAMM. Well, last one I went to, I was like, it's 2020 NAMM. I took my Stonefield over and it fits in the Capsule just fine, which I've always had to modify every other case besides the Stonefield case.
They are long.
Yeah. They're long and the bodies are so thick. That's the
wide
thing.
That was,
yeah, thick and wide. And yeah. And so the other case I have now is the SKB I series, which is, it's just massive. So the I series is the one that, is, you know, waterproof. Basically it's, it's airtight. So if you fly with it, the pressure never doesn't change,
right,
inside the case. There's lots of that. The thing is I found here, that case itself is heavy ass, right, and, it doesn't fit in a lot of cars here. So it won't fit in boots and stuff if I'm out on town, which basically means it's a bit worthless, you know, to me at the moment. You know, it's got built-in casters and everything, so right, great, but they're like trolley wheels. But the Capsule is, I really love the designs of being able to, like, the versatility of having a good case. And I love my mono bags, you know, like the Vertigo is the one I use a lot. And I've flown with those plenty, but this is really the thing with like a sturdy gig bag like that is that they're just not crush, the crush resistance isn't as high. With the polycarbonate shell and everything on the Capsule, it's just, you can get so much else in there. The other thing about the Capsule case is they have internal compartments. You can customize a bit of these as well. So you can get different, like basically what you can do, the idea behind it is there's sort of a layer on top of your guitar or bass where you can fit other things. And so the idea is that, like, if you're doing like a fly date, you can pack a couple days worth of clothes, your leads, a small head. Like they show it, I think, in some of the videos or thing with like one, like a Phil Jones bass, right, head, yeah, or something in with everything else. And there's padding in between. Cause that's the other thing you get with a lot of gig bags is there's not, you know, technically there's a front pocket, but if you're chucking in pedals and or what, you know, like a head or something that's just smashing against your strings and bridge and everything, because there's usually not padding between the two. But it's, you know, and you know, they make single and double versions of this in guitar and bass, so you can do a double bass. Thing is, they're pricey.
Yeah, I mean, the one, just the basic capsule is $399.
Yeah, I would say though they are the case I would go with, and I'm also not scared away because I've in various points in my life I've dealt with like band instruments and a band as in, you know, like orchestral instruments and like double bass cases are like $3,000 to $4,000 sometimes, you know, and so you're just kind of like, okay, well, that's fine. But these, I mean, the thing I really love about these, like the capsule, is that it's got wheels, it's got backpack straps, and it's, and I don't know if you've seen this before too, but the Groove Gear also came out with the gig blade. Do you remember those, like those gig bags?
No, I do not.
So
is that current line?
Yeah. They may still do them. I think, I mean, everything feels very, very capsule focused.
Right. But
the gig blade was.
I see the gig blade. I mean, I've accidentally found the ukulele gig blade.
Oh, but, wow. That seems silly.
Oh, yes. No, here we are. I found the bass ones, the guitar ones, certainly. $119. Those seem good.
Yeah. Yeah. I had one of the early. I think the Gen 1 gig blades. And right. So the idea behind these is that they sort of meant for side carry more so than like flat across your back. Like all gig bags have backpack straps, right? So everything sits against your back. The idea with the gig blade was that all the weight is towards the bottom. So you put it on a shoulder strap and it's the whole case is designed to hold a bass or a guitar in a certain way so that it sort of trails behind you, you know, like so basically wearing it, you know, off one shoulder kind of thing. But it what it means is that it doesn't take up that much space. Right. So if you're trying to navigate, you know, trains or subways, or you're trying to get on a flight without it looking like you have a massive thing that raises alarms for everybody, then it just sort of, you're just like, oh, just carry this on, no big deal. And yeah, they're really cool. I like them a lot. I would say comparable to like a lot of the mono stuff.
It very much looks that way, doesn't it? It's that same sort of robust, this will get you out of 90% of the situations you'll end up in.
Yeah.
Case.
Yeah, they're great. That's, you know, I had one up until I sold the bass that I kept in it before I moved. So then I was like, hey, just take this too, because I don't have room for more cases than basses I have. So
I found I don't ever look at groovegear.com, which is what I'm on now.
Yeah,
I don't know why the brand gets overlooked a little bit for me. Probably just because I love mono, and I think obviously mono do a similar range of stuff, but I was just looking at their straps, at the Groove Gear straps, and they do a duo strap, dear listener, which is a strap designed to go over both shoulders.
Yeah.
So I assume you'd have to fit an extra pin in your guitar about halfway down your guitar, but it basically looks like you're wearing, I don't know, like some sort of life vest.
So Damien Erskine is a phenomenal bass player. I think it's one of those is like sort of his signature strap was like probably the first one they've done. And yeah, so you do put a new, there's a different, like a single strap button on, like you add an additional strap on, but it's meant to like, basically you put the weight over both shoulders. So instead of having the bass always on, you know, for me, my left shoulder, the straps, you know, the weight's always there. You sort of more evenly distribute it. So it's a very ergonomic focused thing as opposed to, you know, I don't know that I'd do it if I was shooting a video, you know, but, you know, if I had a, you know, 6-hour rehearsal day or something like that, you'd be like, yeah, no, it's fair enough, I suppose. But, yeah.
Well, I mean, the rest. Sorry, go on.
Oh no, I was gonna say I'm gonna. Did I put a link to this in the show notes? Oh, yeah, yeah. If you look, look, I put a link to another strap, which is the, which is a...
It's the Etsy link.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's an Etsy link. So it's what is it? Single? I'll look, see what their name is. But it, basically, it's the Steve Albini strap.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The belt buckle.
Yeah. The ones that like go around. So you're just, basically it's just a belt that wraps around your waist and then attaches to the guitar as well. Although on this one, it has two strap buttons in the photo as well. I didn't clock that. Hmm. Yeah, so I was just like, that's the other, I was wanted to talk about like the dual shoulder straps, but then also it's just like, what are the different strap options that that exist today? Not even just different brands, because we'll talk about Mono and, you know, Couch and Ride On for days, but
yeah, you know, yeah, of yeah. course. Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, looking at sort of the standard straps that Groove Gear do, they're really nice. I was looking at their solo yeah. strap Neo, and I was like, oh, it's going to be leather, but it says faux leather. So I think it's actually fine, you know.
Yeah, they. I haven't really checked out any of their like sort of newer to me straps. So it's only just been the ones I've seen before. But yeah, like I mean, all their stuff I really like. It's really high quality. Also, just when you said faux leather, I learned this recently that pleather in the industry is called bio leather. Now, right. so like plasticized, like, so I was looking for new headphone ear cups to replace some of the ones I have, and then I kept finding all these things were like bio leather, and I was like, what is this bio leather?
It's bio
and
leather, it's like, still sounds like it's a real leather, but yeah, it's actually not. Okay, yeah. That's good to know, right?
Yeah, and yeah. It's like, oh, bio leather just means, you know, biological leather, I suppose. And it's like, well, but not for us. But the other thing, just whilst we're here on the Groove Gear tangent, is that they also do a Velok, like this drum series. So it's basically individual like padded cases for drums. But one of the things Groove Gear kind of started with was different sort of carting options. So like making like utility carts for loading drums. Wow. They have this. Are you seeing this? So the Velok, the drum transport.
The Velok yeah. drum transport. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So it's basically you can have your kick, snare, toms, everything in their own cases. It all slides onto a specific specific trolley, basically, with all your stuff. And so it's all maneuverable, like one hand maneuverability. So, you know, if it just, it's the thing that makes me want to get it for my drummer friends, just because it seems so cool. And I just imagine turning up to a gig with like all your stuff in one trip, you know.
Like, I love this. Would be so good. It makes everything look so easy. Our drummer, the drummer in Polymath, despite the fact that he has a very nice like Yamaha forgotten the name of the kit.
They're just saying Yamaha drum kit. That's the one.
Drum kit. Yes, he's got a really lovely, like, custom finished, gorgeous Yamaha kit, and he still has the same hard cases from flight cases from, you know, like his first flight cases that he got, and some of them don't even fit right because he's changed tom sizes. So he has like a. He has some polystyrene in a Tesco bag that pads out one of them. The handles have snapped off them, and he's sort of tied bits of string on. It's always an effort to bring the kit in and out. It's a lovely kit when you get in there, but it's like, why don't you just buy some new hard cases? Throw this away. I'm immediately sending him this link, because this Velok drum transport, dear listener, this is absolute drum porn. This is transport. Yeah. Gear transport porn right there. That it would make me want to bring the drum kit to a venue.
Yeah, I've had sort of forgotten about it, because I almost bought some drummer friends of mine just like a get them hooked on one of the cases and be like, oh, you got a new snare? Here's a snare case for your birthday. You know, it's like, and I'm like, oh, you should just do this whole thing. But it is, it's very cool. It's also the thing, again, calling back to the idea of like not getting new cases and just like making do with stuff. It's like, but it makes everything else so much nicer and easier. And I used to play, so many drummers I play with now still have whatever weird duffel bag for all their hardware that they've had surely since they were in school, you know, like it's all like, oh, it smells like when you could still smoke in pubs, you know, like weird, beery, vomity stank.
We all know that smell. I think I'm going to get one of these Groove Gear Solo Strap Neos. You can get them in 4-inch, 4-inch XL or 2.5. The 4-inch looks great. It's wide enough. It's faux leather, so it's good. It goes as short as 38 inches, which is what I need. It's 38. So that's great. So many things, like the shortest they go to now is like 42, which is very annoying. But it's good.
Yeah. I was just looking at the fabric, like FABRK fabric strap. So I think, I'm going to look into that. Yeah, it says vegan friendly faux leather tips. Great. Yeah.
Wow. Wonderful. Great. That's exactly what we want. More brands doing that sort of thing because it's real simple. You just can sell more because everyone who doesn't care can still buy your strap and enjoy it. But it means that we can also buy straps, and JD and I buy a lot of straps.
Yeah. Yeah. We buy a lot of basses, a lot of guitars, a lot of straps because you have to have. The thing I always forget is that you get to get a new strap every time you buy a new guitar, even though I have plenty of straps for I have more straps than guitars I own. But
what would you say is your main strap, JD?
I've got a really nice couch that I like that's for the Stonefield. The other two I'm sort of using kind of now. I've been trying new brands that I've seen. So I got one. It's like that eco. It's a Brazilian strap called Eco. Right. I think that's the one. Yeah. I got that, and then there's another one I got that's got like cork ends, sort of like echo and layer. And I got a Coco guitar straps on the Bronco that I had made. So the other thing, just
That was lovely.
The other thing with accessories, I was thinking about this too, is that like. It's one of those places where you really can go for smaller brands. Like, for sure, you can go, you know, the Fender straps are classics for a reason. Ernie Ball straps, classics for a reason. You know, they're all there. They're great. They're useful. But it's if you really want something to, like, stand out a bit or something personalized or something that's just really comfy or can fit your specific need, less than $100 usually you can get. You can get whatever strap you need, you know, and like that's a reasonable birthday, you know, gift. It's a gift to yourself. And it's just, you know, nice stuff's worth it, whether or not you can get a $17, you know, like just mesh strap or something. But it's like, you're worth it, dear listener.
Yeah.
Treat yourself, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. I'm using the Riton. They released this basic range.
Oh, yeah.
They're so good. So I got their cream, it's the cream basic beige. I don't know why it says cream and beige in the same thing. I'm not entirely sure what's happening there, but it's just a dead simple, like, woven cream. It looks like it's thick stitching, so it looks very premium, but I think, I can't remember how much it was, like less than £20.
Yeah.
It's just 5 centimeters wide, dead simple. It doesn't have any of their little pick holders built into the strap button, which they, or strap end thing that like they do on most of their straps, which is very useful. But so it's just, you know, the absolute basic, but it's so good. Like, in comparison to any other company doing a basic strap, this is a million times better. It's thick and substantial, and it has proper, like, metal sort of hooks where the strap ends are attached, and a really substantial buckle to adjust the strap height. I know that seems so silly, dear listener, but, like, rather than it being a plastic adjuster on a cheap strap, which is going to snap at some point, it's one of those straps where I've put it on my favorite P bass. It's there. It's, you know, in the band lock up on my P bass that I'll use for all the Polymath shows, and I just know that strap's going to last for years and years and always be great and look cool.
Yeah, I mean, looking at these now, I'm probably going to get one of these. I don't know if that's going to be in addition, but I have a couple Riton straps that I like. The thing I don't like about them is that the other ones have sort of incremental adjustability, right? Yeah, so like where you screw you sort of like unscrew and rescrew in for to the other connecting piece of the strap, so that it's, which is great if that's like once you have it, it's always there.
Yeah.
But I really like the easy adjustability of just kind of regular, you know, these basic straps. So yeah, like there's, I mean, great, they're great quality. They always look cool. You know, like there's loads of options that aren't just, you know, sort of standard boring straps out there. So
yeah. Yeah.
And also, you know, I none of my straps are garish either. You know, like I don't have like the big, like, you know, I don't have lightning bolts and stuff, but it is nice, you know, to have a strap that's just something a bit better than like, you know, seatbelt weave.
I can't stand the seatbelt weave. I've only recently realized what it is. I've never been able to do the seatbelt ones, and I've always been like, why would anyone use them? They cut my neck.
Yeah.
And I've recently realized from actually just looking at more closely at the way most people play guitar is that I pull my guitar across, so almost the neck is in front of me, and I pull it so far across that the strap is smashing right into the side of my neck. And I've never realized that. I tried to play differently, like move my guitar into a normal position, and it felt really uncomfortable. So I think it's just locked into me now to do that. But because the strap is always going to be up against the neck, and I wear it so high in the first place, it's got to be a nice soft material.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I just noted, I think that's the thing, is like we all sort of play differently, even though it seems like a strap should be such an integral part of what it is. But clearly, I think the thing is like there are now new ideas coming in, like the dual strap or the belt strap. It's like we don't all have to do it. Like just because we did it one way, you know, 70 years ago doesn't mean it has to be. We should still be doing it that way.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed is that right on they have a whole like bright and black, bright and brown. So I'm presuming they're, you know, they know this is for us, really. So,
yeah. Those straps look great. Actually, the bright and black and the bright and brown strap from rightonstraps.com. Dear listener, check them out. They're 4 centimeter wide, so a little thinner because I think 5 is standard. I'm not entirely sure. A little bit thinner, and they're like a gorgeous, sort of mottled black and cream or brown and cream weave with a nice little pick holder built into the strap tips. Really nice, really good, and really affordable.
Yeah, I'm really into this. I hadn't fully clocked this series because they're always one of the ones I look at, but I hadn't because I haven't been looking for straps recently.
Yeah, I didn't notice them at all on Righton's website. They're kind of buried amongst a lot of the other things there. But it was that James's Home of Tone, who stock Righton straps in the UK, dear listener, they're absolutely where you should be buying them if you are in the UK. He got some in, and I was at a guitar show and saw them, so made my always try and purchase something from James at a guitar show because he's so cool and his shop is full of such wonderful brands.
I was just looking at some of the, sorry not to just keep going, but like the Go series are the ones, I think, right? Is that what they're called? They have so many absolutely incredible designs out here, you know, that really, really cool, really cool straps, I think. They also have a dual strap. I'm gonna look into that. I might get a dual strap just to review,
have
it.
A dual strap.
It might partially, I'm thinking about it now because I slept poorly and now and my I can't turn my neck fully, so I'm just like, maybe I need to have a dual strap just in case for these bad days where I don't want to put more weight on.
I got one at some point in the past, a Daddario one that it still just went onto your normal strap pins. You didn't have to drill anything extra, but it had a part of the strap that sat over each shoulder.
Yeah.
And I think, but it wasn't very good. It was, it was a seatbelt material. It was a cheaply done thing. It didn't really do what I hoped it would do, but I think I bought it because, Jack White had played, one of the big UK festivals with the Raconteurs, and he had a double strap, for that. And it was incredibly cool. Rather than just taking the guitar off, he had to unclip the guitar.
Yeah.
And then he could have a new guitar given to him to clip onto the existing strap. So the strap always stayed on. It was like a gun shoulder holster style.
Yeah.
Thing.
It was, yeah.
Incredibly cool. I've no idea what it was. And I sort of hunted for something similar for a few months afterwards.
I like the idea of having like a harness where you just clip on. One of my first sort of strap lock kind of things I had on an old Fender MB5, I think, going way back. I think it was DiMarzio had, it's basically you screwed in, it was a little piece of seatbelt material that then had like clips that you get on like hiking backpacks or something like that.
Oh, right.
And then so the strap, you clipped into that. So it was cool, except if you didn't have a strap, you had these two little like dangly little things like you have a hiking backpack.
I still see those loads because I think Daddario do that sort of concept now. I think it's popular with metal guys or techie guys. It's like that sort of if you like Strandbergs and laptops, then you know you probably own this strap sort of thing. It's God, that was so passive aggressive of me. It seems like a great idea. It's a very modern look, isn't it? Having a hiking backpack clip on your guitar.
I think we can say of the 400 listeners who filled out a survey to win a Chapman guitar thus far, no one put down Strandbergy headless, you know, like attaches to you intravenously or something. So
exactly. Well, anyway, that does in fact, dear listener, bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We haven't done picks, cables, patch cables, power supplies, tools, or strings. So we've got loads more to do. We're probably going to cover more of that in the Patreon. I know I said we'd do Gear of the Year, but I think we're in it now. So we're going to head over there and talk about that. Do join us, patreon.com/guitar nerds. If you head over to that website, it gives you information on how to sign up. You can be a part of this community for as little as $1 a month. There's a $5 and a $10 tier that get you different things, essentially. So check it out. Do join us there. And thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Thank you to our top-tier Patreon backers for your constant support and making it possible for us to continue doing this podcast. Thank you to Rocket Rob Patterson, Marcus Deluxe, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conaway, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einzler, Mark Hizal Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losif, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, the wonderful Moog Gravett.